Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Whether you're tuning in from one of our Minnesota radio stations, listening on our national broadcast, or catching the show on a podcast platform, we are glad that you are here. On today's show, we hear the story of a Medal of Honor recipient, learn about a foundation that provides education scholarships to the spouses of those who have served our country, and we check in with the Patriot Guard. Captain Willibald Charles Bianchi, New Ulm, man whose courage in the Philippines during World War II stands among the most extraordinary acts of valor in American military history. In early 1942, as U.S. and Filipino forces fought desperately on the Bataan Peninsula, then Lieutenant Bianchi volunteered to lead an assault against enemy machine gun positions that had pinned down another unit. He was hit almost immediately, but he refused medical attention and pushed forward. According to his Medal of Honor citation, he kept fighting even after multiple wounds, switching from his rifle to his pistol when he could no longer hold it, and then climbing onto an American tank to man its anti-aircraft gun. From that exposed position, he poured fire into enemy lines until he was struck again and knocked from the tank. His actions broke the enemy's resistance and saved countless lives. That level of courage, wounded again and again yet refusing to stop, is why the United States awarded him the Medal of Honor for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity above and beyond the call of duty. But Bianchi's heroism didn't end on the battlefield. After the fall of Bataan, he endured the death march and nearly 3 years as a prisoner of war. Fellow POWs remembered him as a man who shared his food, tended to the sick, and never lost his compassion, even in the darkest conditions. Captain Bianchi was killed in 1945 aboard the Japanese transport ship Inura Maru, but his legacy lives on in Minnesota, in the Philippine Scouts, and in every soldier who understands what it means to serve with courage and selflessness. In the studio to share more about their uncle is Sue Marty and Steve Marty. Sue and Steve, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. We're honored to be here.
Well, it is wonderful to have you in the studio. And, you know, I get you for two segments, and there's just so much to talk to you as it relates to the story of your uncle. And I want to make sure that we get through as much as we can in the limited amount of time. And so how about if I just start with you, Sue, right off the bat, and maybe you can just tell us a little bit about your uncle. It's your mom's only brother. And what was he like growing up, according to the stories you heard?
The stories that my mother told us were amazing. She loved him a lot. Her only brother, she looked up to him, and she really, really appreciated having him around. He was a very sensitive man, strong but sensitive. They had worked hard on the farm that they had. And as a teenager, he went to look for his father, who was hunting some animals that were killing their chickens on the farm. And he came upon him, and he had been shot, tangled in some barbed wire, and been shot and killed. So as a teenager, he found him, his own father, killed. So that, again, was one of her memories as well, as a younger sister, losing her dad, and Uncle Bill finding him. So that was very hard, I think, for her.
Yeah, so it's some years later then that Bill obviously signs up to go and serve, and we'll dig into the story a little bit here. But I'm just wondering if there's any, like, specific stories, other than this horrible story that you told about him finding his father killed due to a hunting accident. But is there any story that your mom might have shared that that sticks out and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, this is pretty neat?
There is one that she told me. And I don't know why she even told it to me, but she was helping him get ready for a date. And he was so nervous, she said. And she was trying to get him to get new outfits on and try different outfits, clothes, shirts, whatever. He was just so nervous, she could hardly believe it. But she helped him get ready for a date, and she was pretty happy doing that as well. So
this guy that we learned through some of the citation I already read and the actual Medal of Honor citation that others will be able to read, we'll attach those the links into our show notes. But to hear about this guy who's kind of timid and maybe a little nervous certainly didn't demonstrate that when it truly mattered, and that was fighting in our nation's wars.
Yes. He also, written in some things to Grandma Carrie that he used to be out picking wildflowers for her and bringing her small presents and things like that. So he is a very adoring son as well, I think.
Yeah. Now, so obviously we can't get into all of his service, but he goes off to serve and he's killed in action. And somehow, you know, there has to be a notification to your grandma. And how did that go? What was that like? What kind of support did she receive upon that notification and then thereafter?
Well, during the times, the 46, communications were very slow. So it wasn't until months after he had been killed on that ship, prisoner of war ship, that she even found out that he was killed in action. So the timing on that really was a long time. But after that notice, after she received that notice that he was killed, she started receiving letters of sorrow, letters of support from all around the country, newspaper articles printed all around the country about him and his heroism when receiving the medal as well. So the amount of support in those days was all in paper form and really, really amounted to a lot.
And Steve, you had mentioned that there was kind of a famous general that also sent a letter and talked a little bit about his service. Who was that from?
A general named Douglas MacArthur.
He might be well known, huh?
Yeah. And when we've read that letter many times on public broadcasting, and when we were interviewed for that, and just to read it gave me shivers, kind of just knowing who he was. And to read this letter that he wrote to my grandmother about my uncle was quite quite overwhelming.
Yeah,
it really was.
I can imagine. And you still have copies of all of this stuff. You were sharing some old letters that that you've accumulated. And we're going to talk in a next segment, Sue. We'll talk about you and how you maintain the legacy and that big book of records you maintain. We'll talk about that then. But, Steve, I want to stay with you for just a moment, because the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, even though they knew that your uncle had been killed in action, they didn't have any remains to identify. And so it took many, many years. I mean, it was like just recently that you got a phone call or the family got a phone call. Tell us a little bit about the DPAA.
Yeah, you've already said what the acronym means, which we had never heard of. And the next thing you know, Sue gives all the whole family a call or an email or a text and said they found his remains. They had identified him. And you could hardly comprehend what I had heard from her, that that actually happened after 80 years, that they found his remains and identified his remains through DNA. So that whole process is just truly amazing. And I think you'll talk about it a little more later. But next thing you know, we're on a plane to the Pentagon for this incredible ceremony. And our whole family has changed. That call from Sue just kind of changed everything, our life, because we always knew about Uncle Bill. But this really magnified everything.
And I would imagine, Sue, that, you know, you've heard all of the stories. And he was a young man, but there's still a lot of stories in this legacy of your uncle. I mean, there probably was really no thought that he might ever be able to actually come home.
Oh, we never would imagine that. One of the first things we also said as family, our cousins as well as us, was we wish our moms would have been here to hear this and to actually know that he had been recovered after all these years, because all four of his sisters were very close to him. He used to send his sister Germaine, who's in nursing school, money to help get her through school. And she actually went to the Philippines, but after he had already been killed. So none
of his siblings were alive when the notification came in. It was all of the nieces, nephews, and extended family.
Yes, that's all it was, yes.
Wow. And, you know, when you think about his service, Steve, you know, you served as well. Mm-hmm. What does that kind of legacy mean to you, knowing that, you know, it started way back when and you've continued as well?
Yeah, I was commissioned second lieutenant myself, and realizing what Uncle Bill was, that I often thought, wow, what he went through, would I be able to have that kind of DNA in me to be able to do what he did in those circumstances? It's just so incredible. Feel honored that I spent a little time in the National Guard myself and was a commissioned second lieutenant.
Yeah, well, thank you for your service. We appreciate that. And obviously the great service of your uncle. We've got about a minute left, and I'm just wondering if you might have a story that you can share quickly about your uncle.
Well, it has to do with his sisters, actually, what made me think of this. I thought it was so appropriate. When we met Secretary Hegseth at the Pentagon, one of my sisters made pictures of all his sisters, and we wore them when we met Secretary Hegseth. And the people we talked to there said, "Who is this?" These are Uncle Bill's sisters. And we all had them around our neck. And we were kind of honored
really
to do
neat.
That. Yeah, we thought it was unique.
That's awesome. Well, we'll talk about the ceremony. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. I want to hear about the Pentagon trip and then the announcement that took place here in Minnesota. And you've met some, you know, high-ranking officials, government officials, and we'll hear all about that. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me is Sue Marty and Steve Marty, the niece and nephew of Captain Willibald Bill Bianchi, Medal of Honor recipient. Before we went into that first break there, Steve, you had mentioned briefly about meeting the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. I'm wondering if you might be able to describe just a little bit about why did you need to go out there? Because obviously we had learned that the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency positively identified the remains of your uncle. And there's got to be a way to inform you. That process took place, which Sue had to fill out a bunch of paperwork and inform the family. But then there's this trip where you guys were given a gag order and said, come on out to the Pentagon.
Yeah, after we got the call and found out that they identified his remains, next thing you know, we're making arrangements. Four of us were allowed to go, me and three sisters, and we flew to D.C. and near the Pentagon, stayed there. And next thing you know, we're in the ceremony. Well, before that, we were in meeting the Secretary of War, Hegseth, which was quite unique in itself. And I'll never forget the image of walking out of the Pentagon into the play field or whatever they call their field through this gauntlet of soldiers and stands and all these military, every branch, 30, 40 soldiers, all in formation in front of us, sitting down, and then we're introduced. And that whole thing was, and I said to Sue, like, where are we? Because it was so unique, so surreal for us to be in that situation. So we got introduced, we stood up, there was a jet flyover, played all the military songs, passing review in front of us. Very unique. Sue, I don't know if you have anything else.
Yeah, Sue, what's your thoughts or opinion about that day?
It was kind of a whirlwind. It was short. We flew in on Thursday, flew out on Friday, but it was so much information that we saw, so much data, so many things that were so awestruck about what happened. And people behind us were tapping us on the shoulder and congratulating us after they announced that he had been recovered, and people we didn't know. And then we met some people from New Ulm there. And so it was it was kind of amazing to go to this kind of a ceremony and meet someone from New Ulm who grew up in New Ulm.
Yeah.
So
What an interesting thing. And I mean, and they treated you well, didn't they? I mean,
you really felt
like your royalty, I would assume, the way they take care of business. And this is such an important thing to be able to identify and notify that the remains of one of our lost service members has been found. All right. So you do the ceremony. You come back. It doesn't end there because his remains still have to get back to Minnesota, because you guys are going to have a ceremony that we'll talk about in just a minute later on in May and lay him to rest in New Ulm. But there was some other things that took place, Steve, before that. There was an event up at the Minnesota State Capitol as well. Tell us what happened up there.
Yeah, we got invited to this thing that Senator Klobuchar was, I assume, initiating, and the press was there. And she read a congressional record that was written that she must have done on the floor of the Senate. And she read that and got all interviewed by the local stations for that. I mean, it was just another kind of surreal thing that is just really happening to us.
Yeah. And I have to imagine, Sue, that it is surreal because this is someone you've never met before, but yet you must feel like you've known him because of the stories and what you've read.
Yes, we do feel like we know him. We have so many letters to Grandma Carrie, so many things. He wrote to Mom letters. He wrote to his sister Jerry letters. We have those letters in his writing. Meeting people that you would never imagine you met. His Uncle Bill's staff sergeant in the Philippines, great-nephew, contacted me. And he sent me some documents that Uncle Bill had signed for supplies for the men over there. You just can't imagine the the breadth of this thing. It's just so big. And to find people that actually were with him or knew him. Captain Spaulding was at one of the memorial dedications in Brookings. He was on the ship with Uncle Bill when they brought him up from the hull after he had been killed, after we had dropped the bomb. And he saw Mom. He met Mom then at that memorial dedication and talked to her. I just remember her eyes welling up with tears. So he must have been talking about Uncle Bill.
Yeah. And part of the story you were telling me earlier was that he didn't even need to be down below. He was down there because that was the kind of caring and compassionate man that he was, to take care of the sick.
Yes, that's what he was doing in the hall, was taking care of the sick. You're right.
We'll run out of time here. We've got just under 5 minutes left here. And there are some other memorials that are in place honoring your uncle. Where are some of those memorials?
Well, there are two memorials in Brookings, South Dakota State University. And when I had moved out there with work, and in 1998, the first memorial was dedicated. It's a bronze relief in the Student Union. And the second one is in their military park, and that's a granite memorial dedicated to Uncle Bill as well.
Nice. And you're going to have a big memorial for him coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about the next process? Because he's not here yet.
No.
So he needs to come here through the dignified remains transfer.
Yes.
And then there'll be a ceremony in New Ulm. So when is all this taking place? What's happening? What are the next steps?
Well, the dignified transfer will happen at the end of April. And then we have let's call it a visitation, a burial service, and then a small gathering afterwards. And that will be at our New Ulm Armory Readiness Center, which is recently built. It's a beautiful place to have it. So that will be May 2nd, starting at 10. And then we'll go to the cemetery from there and then go back to the Readiness Center for some relief with some people and meet some people again and talk.
Yeah. And the public is invited.
Yes. Yes, it's an open funeral.
It's an open funeral.
Yep.
And all of that information, like I said earlier, will be out connected with our show so people can go get that information to know. They'll be able to link to the obituary, which is just a fantastic write-up of his service, and then obviously the service that will be provided. And now, again, you know, you've never known him, but is this piece, does this give you a sense of closure then, Sue?
Well, I think it will, and I hadn't thought about it because we're doing so much planning with this for this process. Greg said to me, you know, for the dignified transfer, it's going to be very emotional.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought of it like that. The more we hear from people that may have known him or had relatives that known him that talked about him, you just find you're tearing up a little bit and saying, you know, how could this happen to us? How could we be so fortunate, as many families aren't? So we're very appreciative of the support.
And Steve, what goes through your mind as you're thinking about, you know, what you've already gone through, knowing that he's been identified, knowing there's going to be a dignified transfer of remains, and then obviously this big ceremony on 2nd of May? What kind of thoughts are going through your mind?
You know, the thing that's really touched me is how many people have expressed interest. She just got a letter or something from somebody from South Carolina, the lady from South Carolina. She's the chief of staff of the Medal of Honor
chief of staff.
She's flying in from South Carolina. Like, really?
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed by that. And even that's expressed interest, we think it's really going to be something special.
And out at that ceremony at the Pentagon, were you presented with the actual Medal of Honor then?
No.
No.
What happens with that?
No, the Medal of Honor was presented to Grandma in June of 1946.
Okay.
And that, with four other medals that are there that he had, are currently in the Brown County Historical Society Museum.
Okay.
So mother and her sisters donated those medals to the museum. So they're going to be on full display, and that display will be open May 2nd as well at the museum.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. So that's awesome to have gotten that. And obviously, you know, we know what his service meant. And that's why he got the Medal of Honor. So that's great. Well, let's talk real quick then here, because we're about a minute and a half. Sue, you've got a big job ahead of you, though. You've got documents upon documents that have been passed down from Grandma to your mom to now you, and you are the keeper of the legacy. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's really important. I have everything in a huge tote. So every so often I take it out. I organize it. I organize it kind of by year. Newspaper articles, did they come from around the country? Try to keep things in order. Well, I keep that up. I keep that downstairs now, and I keep going through it.
Yeah.
And I separated, and I said, okay, this is all South Dakota things. When he went to college there, I could put that aside. Well, now I pulled that out again. Then I have stuff from newspaper articles. Then I pulled the letters out that came from around the country. And where's this one now? I got to find this one. I want to look for this one in particular. So it's really, and the family comes over and look, I didn't see that. I never saw that. So they're kind of surprised as well. But I'm trying to keep it in order, and it's really getting to be a job.
Yeah, it is, but an important one.
But yes, I'm very happy to be doing it. The family has all taken a little part of it and helped with it between the planning and the organizing. So we've all done our part.
Well, May 2nd again is the date. We'll put all those links out on our show so that people can get to it. 30 seconds. Final thoughts at all, Steve?
You know, as pictures on the wall growing up, and you're so busy with your life, your friends, your sports, and you just don't really comprehend how significant it was. Lowell Thomas wrote a book, All These Men Shall Never Die, and that made it in the paper, and we've had that around the house, read the story of him. But it really has set in now with what's all happening since we got the call that they've identified his remains.
I bet it is. Sue, final thoughts, about 10 seconds.
We just want to thank everyone for all the support they've given us through this whole process.
Yes.
It's a learning process for us, but our family is so appreciative of the help.
For sure.
And
for
I know Greg Peterson down there in the county at the CVSO office gave you some support too. So
he does.
It's great to see our CVSOs involved in taking care of our veterans out there.
Thank him a lot.
Well, hey, Sue Marty, Steve Marty, thank you guys so much for coming in, spending some time with Minnesota Military Radio, and sharing about your uncle, Captain Bianchi. What a fantastic man, and what a hero. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
You bet. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. Recently, I had the opportunity to sit down with Eric Thurwanger and Kathy Bowe from the Think Great Foundation. Here's that conversation.
Eric, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me on today, Doug.
Eric, one of the things that we like to do is highlight organizations or entities that are supporting our military members, current serving, our veterans. But you have a unique foundation here that actually recognizes military spouses. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The Think Great Foundation, we started in 2019 as a way to recognize the sacrifices of the military spouse, a very overlooked community. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I served from 87 to 91, so I understand the challenges that come with military life. But there's also some challenges and sacrifices made by another part of the equation, the military spouse. As a speaker and trainer, I've gone all over the country and worked with different military commands and been very fortunate to work in the family readiness area and share ideas on goal setting and other aspects of inspiration with the troops and their spouses. And through that process, I really got to hear more about the struggles of the spouse, how much they sacrifice, especially on the education side. So many of them sacrifice their educational goals. They'll stop going to the higher education, which also hinders their career goals. So we've stepped in to award scholarships strictly to the military spouse.
And Eric, when did you form the foundation?
So we had the idea for the foundation around 2016, 2017, and then it took us some time to just put everything together. We did our official launch in 2019.
And you are a not-for-profit organization, and you award scholarships to spouses. Tell us a little bit about maybe the eligibility.
Sure. We award scholarships based on the basic criteria that the time and service of the service member and the marriage coincided. So as long as they were married during the time of service, they're eligible to apply for a scholarship with us.
And what has been the most rewarding thing for you so far in the last 7 years or so that you've had the foundation up and running?
You know, we get a lot of great success stories, but I think my favorite is when they let us know that they would not have been able to go pursue their higher education without our foundation. You know, military life, people are not in it for the pay. And so some of them struggle financially. And so we step in to help. And when we realize that we have awarded scholarships, sometimes multiple scholarships to the same military spouse, and it helped them get their degree or a certified program that they were able to accomplish and enrich their lives and their family lives, that's the best thing that happens.
And you were able to bring along with you today a board member. Maybe you can give us an introduction.
Absolutely. We are joined today by one of our newest board members, Kathy Bowe. Kathy has an amazing connection to the military and just has brought so much passion to our board.
Well, Kathy, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's really wonderful to be here.
All right. So tell us a little bit about you and what actually brought you to the board other than Eric saying, hey, you need to become a member.
So I had the opportunity to meet Eric a few years back, and I started learning about this foundation. And at that time, I was really busy in a lot of different things, but it really spiked my interest on what they're doing for military spouses. And that is because through my career, I have a background in early childhood education, and I have been really awarded wonderful opportunities through the National Association for the Education of Young Children, where I would visit military installations in five different countries and watch what was going on within the CDCs for accreditation. So my love of education and being able to visit these bases and really meeting all of the families that were on base and veterans as well was just so inspiring to me that this was such a perfect fit. It was just my love of education and love of military. But for the most part, why I really wanted to get involved is I'm a very proud parent of a U.S. Marine veteran. And our son served during Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. And boy, I'll tell you, that was our love of military right then and there. So,
and, you know, in your short time on the board here, what have you found to be really the most rewarding thing for you?
Yeah, so the most rewarding thing that I have found is as we start to spread this message across the board for different organizations out in the community, really getting the education about what this foundation does for spouses, for the military, there are so many aha moments out there. People are like, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that. Or they'll be like, oh my gosh, I have military family. We would have been doing this had we known that there was an opportunity for educational spouses. So it's really the awareness part and building those connections, bringing them back through. We actually have found so many wonderful other organizations that are out there as well, but none that truly hit this mark. And this is why we are here. And I have just been so proud to be a part of it.
Now, Eric, I'm just wondering if the fact that she's a parent of a proud Marine, if that had anything to do with you pursuing her to be a member of the board.
Well, that was a big part of it, especially. And just that passion that she has. I knew when I met Kathy, I said, all right, this is a mom, a Marine mom, and super passionate about what we do. So I just started planting seeds and talking to her. And then finally, I just had to grab a coffee with her and say, okay, look, I'd like to have you on the board. And then she took, I would, about a day, give it some thought, because she has a very packed schedule. And then she got back to us and said yes, and I did a lot of silent fist pumps. We were absolutely enthusiastically stoked that she's on board with us.
Now, Eric, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how much has the foundation awarded out in scholarship funds, and then tell us a little bit about the board. Like, for example, do you pay your board?
Well, I'll start with that. Our board and our volunteers work for free. Nobody takes a dime from the foundation. So this is all from the heart. And we've been very fortunate to work with amazing board members and volunteers that have been moved by our cause. As far as how we've awarded out over $200,000 in scholarships currently, and we'll be encroaching that $250,000 mark very soon.
And so let's talk about that. You know, you have to raise the funds some way. One of the events that I've heard about is the Gunning for Greatness event. That's one of the fundraisers, but you also have another major fundraiser. Maybe quickly tell us a little bit about Gunning for Greatness and then what your major fundraiser is for the year.
Yeah, Gunning for Greatness is exactly what it sounds like. It's a gun raffle, and we have found, at least here in Minnesota, people are very enthusiastic about coming out and bidding on guns. And so we typically have about a dozen different firearms. We team up with a local chamber, the Elko New Market Chamber, and we host this amazing event. So we just had our second one, and we had almost 100 people at that one. And people are already inquiring about the third one, which will be October 20th. And then that leads us to the Homefront Heroes Gala. We named it the Homefront Heroes Gala simply because that's how we view military spouses, as the Homefront Heroes, holding everything together. And so we gather on Friday, May 29th. We'll gather at the evening in Brackett's Crossing in Lakeville. There'll be about 250 people there. There are still some seats available so people can register. And we have been teamed up with amazing sponsors and donors that help us raise all the funds so that we can award scholarships out. But that night, we'll actually have about seven military spouses go across stage and be recognized and celebrated. We'll have an MC who's actually from 102.9 The Wolf, PT from the Thunder and PT show. He'll be there. We have a DJ. We have an amazing singer. And just a great night of entertainment, live auction, silent auction, people coming together to support this community that is just so often forgotten.
And what's the website where people could get more information about the foundation and, more importantly, the event?
Sure. It's www.thinkgreatfoundation.org.
All right, Kathy, we only have about 2 minutes left here, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are as you approach this season to get to the gala. It's right around the corner. It's in May. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, excitement. We are so excited to now the board, as we review all the applications that have been coming in, and just hearing everybody's stories and their pursuit for education and how it's going to change their lives. This is the time, and this is the time if people want to be really a part of something special, go online, join us at the event, or just even donate. Every donation helps us to give more scholarships out. So we really want everybody involved. And I'll tell you, if there is anything I can say to this, is that this is a foundation and organization that stands true to its word. It is all about the military spouses, the military family, and the military community.
Now, Eric, the application window just closed, but can you explain what the application window is for people who are listening now that might want to get into the next round of applications?
Yeah, absolutely. So our application window for scholarships opens from January 1st through February 28th every year, and military spouses can apply regardless of what branch the service member served in. We award to all branches. We award to all states. We award to anywhere that a military spouse is living. We award that person a scholarship.
Awesome. All right. Well, thinkgreatfoundation.org is the place to go to get information about the foundation, about the events, the fundraising, and, of course, ways to get more information to donate and support this great cause. Eric, Kathy, thank you guys so much for just spending a little bit of time with us. Best of luck with the gala, your future fundraising, and really appreciate all that you guys do.
Hey, thanks so much for having us, Doug. We appreciate the support.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us here.
You bet. That is Kathy Bowe and Eric Thurwanger with the Think Great Foundation.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. And calling in from parts unknown, Mr. Craig Uglund, representing the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Craig, great to hear your voice. Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug. It's always an honor to be on the show.
Well, so it has been a long time, I think. I mean, it feels like a long time since we've had the Patriot Guard on, and I get to have you on for a little bit of an extended time frame today. I get you for about 9 minutes. And, you know, one of the things I don't remember ever doing when we've talked or over the on the radio show is to hear about what brought you to the Patriot Guard. And I thought maybe we could start there and you could maybe share just a little bit about your first mission with the Patriot Guard.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, we're going on in a few months. It'll be 20 years since my first mission. It was I found out about the Patriot Guard from a vendor for a company I used to work for. And he had been to a few funerals in Iowa where some protesters had shown up. And he told me about it. And I looked up what the Patriot Guard Riders was about. And I thought that that would be a good fit. And lo and behold, a few months later, we got one of our first calls for a flag line mission for USMC Robert Presidio from Welcome, Minnesota. And unfortunately, it was the family's second loss. They lost a son 2 years prior to an accident while home on leave. So it really, you know, struck me and about 450 other Patriot Guard riders from Minnesota that all showed up that day in Welcome. And I think we just about doubled the size of the town. But it was an incredible impact on myself and a lot of other riders. And that was kind of the real big kickoff for the Patriot Guard. And
wow, and going on 20 years. That's amazing. And thank you for continuing to do that. And, you know, the interesting thing apart about your story as I was reading out on the website was that you were unable to serve, but this is your way of giving back. And it just means so much to you that now you're actually the state captain and board of directors. So you're moving up the ranks too.
Yeah, I've been, I started out as a ride captain in Rochester area. A few years later, I took on the role of a senior ride captain and held that for about 10 years. And then assistant state captain for a few years. And then I've been the state captain for almost 10 years myself. So it's definitely a passion of mine. And like you said, I wasn't able to serve cause I had a lifelong disability. And like you said, this is my way to to pay back those that were able to serve and those families that lost their loved ones.
Well, although not in the military, you still are serving, and for that, again, I thank you. I do want to remind our listening audience, Craig, about the mission. Like, why does the Patriot Guard exist?
Well, as I kind of mentioned, we originally were formed because of some protesters that were showing up at funerals and disrespecting the day. And it wasn't right. And five Legion riders and their wives got together down in Kansas, and the wives said, quit talking about it and start doing something. So they got permission from the family of a funeral down in Kansas and were allowed to hold a flag line, and it was simply to shield the family from these protesters. And it's become so much more than that. You know, we always are concerned if there would be a protester or whatnot, that we would help law enforcement and shield the family from them. But it's an absolute non-issue anymore. And we're really just there to show our respect for the families, whether it's a soldier killed in action like Nicole Amore, or an active duty death, or veterans. And, you know, we also attend send-offs and welcome homes for soldiers, so they know that we're here waiting for them to come back.
Craig,
no,
you know,
how they come back, we're going to be here.
You'd mentioned Master Sergeant Nicole Amore, U.S. Army Reserves, who is from White Bear Lake, Minnesota. She was killed in Kuwait on March 1st, 39 years of age, and that's got to be just one of the toughest parts of the mission. I mean, obviously, you're there for the family. You're there to show, you know, that honor, the dignity, the respect that service member has earned and they deserve. But that's just got to be real tough, especially you haven't had one of these in a long time.
Correct, Doug. I don't recall having an actual killed in action mission in over 10 years in Minnesota. So we were definitely all at attention and ready to go, and kind of went back to the basics of making sure that we did everything in proper order and, you know, exactly how the military wanted us and how the family wanted us to be there. And it was good to see some of the old blood come back from back in the day. And with that, we had a lot of new members, too, that saw what had happened and wanted to be a part of honoring Nicole's family. And we were extremely honored to be invited to all aspects of her coming home and her dignified transfer and funeral and interment. And that's a huge honor that we are very lucky to have, and we strive very hard to keep that reputation so that we continue to get invited to special occasions.
And I think that's the key right there, isn't it? You need to be invited, and people can do that at mnpatriotguard.org, where they can get information not only about volunteering, because you do need volunteers. You want people to come out and stand on that flag line, but for families who might want to request to have the Patriot Guard there in some form or fashion. And you've had a couple of other events that you've been doing. We had a Marine service member who was killed in training by the name of Michael McMahon. And that's another ceremony that you guys participated in. And I think this one's kind of interesting as well. Craig, I just had on the show here the story about Willibald Bianchi, who received the Medal of Honor back in 1945. His remains were never found until last year. And his remains were found, they were properly identified, and now he's coming home. And you guys are going to be as a part of a flag line for his ceremony as well, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are, although it's still a funeral, they're kind of a great moment to recharge the battery, because as it is a funeral, it's still a celebration for his family to be able to bring him home where he belongs and have closure on him being missing for quite such a, you know, such a long time.
Yeah, it's funny you say closure because it was his niece and nephew that were here. All of his siblings, Willibald's siblings, are all deceased now. So it's just the nieces and nephews and extended family. And they did say that, you know, to a certain extent, it is closure because they've heard these stories. They grew up listening and hearing about him, but never got to meet him. And so now they finally get to meet him, which is pretty cool. Hey, we've got a minute. Memorial Day is right around the corner. What do you got going on?
Yeah, so we get requests from all over the state. So many, many years ago, you know, we would get requests to participate in local city events. And unfortunately, we just don't have the membership to cover every one of those. So what we do is we just focus on our state veteran cemeteries, unfortunately. And we have, we'll have our missions posted on our state calendar here in the next month or so. And we ask that our members direct their attention and time to those ceremonies across the state.
And the great thing is the state ceremonies are all on the Sunday at the state veterans ceremony. And then obviously the national one is done on Memorial Day. So, well, we look forward to seeing you and the rest of the team out there on the flag line representing and honoring those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. So, hey, Craig, we appreciate you calling in and spending some time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio.
All right. Thank you, Doug.
All right. That is Craig Uglin. He's the state captain and board of directors for the Patriot Guard Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. Our goal is to bring you meaningful and informative content each week, and we always welcome your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us to share your thoughts, questions, or recommendations. Next week, we check in with the Minnesota State Veterans Home in Minneapolis to learn about the Adult Day program, and we'll get an update about Veterans Day on the Hill. Be sure to tune in for that episode and visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com to catch up on past shows. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and that you take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so that we can all enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.